Listen and stream the only talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.
This time we've got an interview for you. A financial series, more or less on a Wednesday. Today we're talking about managing your credit card, and joining us, gentlemen, Senior Manager, the National Financial Literacy Program and Financial Services Ombudsman. I say good morning and welcome to our show, Dominic Stoddard. Good morning to you.
Hi, good morning. Good morning to you and good morning to your listeners.
It's nice to have you with us here this morning. Let's set the foundation for people to understand exactly who we're speaking with. As I do with most of my guests, to give you the opportunity to familiarize our listeners with you and some of what you're involved in. Go right ahead.
Well, I'm a career central banker. I've been here for more than two decades. My background is economics and statistics. But right now I wear two main hats. I'm the financial services ombudsman. That is the person or the office that you come to if you have a problem with your commercial bank, your non-bank financial institution, or your insurance company. Let's say you have a problem and you're seeking redress and you're not satisfied with the outcomes there. We are an independent office located at the central bank where you could come to have us investigate and see, ensure that you get the appropriate redress. I'm also the head of the National Financial Literacy Program. It's a program that was set up by the central bank back in 2007. And the idea behind that office is really to empower citizens of Trinidad and Tobago to make prudent financial decisions. Now, managing your personal financial affairs is an important life skill, and we all have it, but in varying degrees. And there are times when we make decisions that is to our detriment, or those of our children or siblings, what have you, because either we did not prepare adequately for when they would really need money to pursue advanced studies or to pursue business endeavors or what have you, or sometimes we just don't plan for risk and take appropriate decisions to plan for retirement. So the financial literacy program, the National Financial Literacy Program of the Central Bank, we do a lot of free sessions all over the country. We do a lot virtually, we do in person, and we try to empower citizens to make appropriate financial choices. That's in a nutshell is my background, what I do, the hats I wear.
It's pretty interesting. I mean, the National Financial Literacy Program, and I want to get a bit of the Financial Services Ombudsman, that because ombudsman's offices across the country, they deal with several things. Many people are not necessarily aware of the avenues available to them to get redress. That's first and foremost. The National Financial Literacy Program rolled out across the country in various ways, as you were saying. What are some of the more prevalent issues that confront citizens when it comes to their financial literacy?
All right. Well, the reason why the Central Bank paired the Office of the Financial Services Ombudsman with the National Financial Literacy Program is that one could be seen as preventative medicine. If you're financially literate, you don't make some of the financial mistakes that are common and that are avoidable. That's on the one hand. But if you make choices and you do find yourself in problems and you're seeking to have your problem redressed and in a fair manner to you, you come to the Office of the Ombudsman, which is like curative medicine. So on the one hand, it's preventative, and the other office is curative. And some of the common problems, well, I'll tell you problems more from the ombudsman side, because that's where people come with complaints about their financial institutions, right? So most of the complaints on the ombudsman side comes from the insurance industry. So we will have issues like undue delay. You get in a motor vehicular accident, and for whatever reason, it's taken forever to someone has basically admitted liability. It was clear who was wrong in the accident, which company is liable, and for some reason it seems to be going on and on without you getting a settlement to get your vehicle repaired and get back on the road. That's a fairly common complaint or problem that people have in the financial sector. Another one is inadequate settlement. So you get in a motor vehicular accident, it would cost probably, let's say, $50,000 for a round, nice round figure to have your vehicle repaired. But in the assessment, you seem to be getting, you get an offer of $35,000. Now, sometimes $35,000 could actually be what is required to indemnify you, to make you whole again, because your vehicle would have been depreciating. But sometimes it's not. And if you think that it's inadequate, and if you, for all practical purposes, you come to us and we make a determination that, no, this is not really fair. We try to mediate on your behalf so you can get a better settlement. On the banking side, this is where you may see transactions that you know nothing about or discrepancies in your account. And you've given the institution at least 2 months to rectify or explain what's really taking place. And at the end of it, you're still not satisfied with the outcome. You can come to our office and we assist you by interceding, by investigating, and by mediating on your behalf. And the National Financial Literacy Program, which is not so much about complaints, it's more about empowering individuals to ask the right questions, to make the right choices, to ensure that you are empowered in the financial decisions that you make.
Mm. The Financial Services Ombudsman covers what scope? What organizations and entities fall under its jurisdiction?
It covers all those institutions that are licensed by the Central Bank of Trinidad and Tobago.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the first instance, we have commercial banks. Then we have licensed non-bank financial institutions, which are trust and mortgage finance companies, finance houses, and merchant banks. And also, it covers insurance companies.
Okay. I think that's great information, because people might be asking themselves, who do I deal with? Where do I go? So that's definitely valuable information. We're here to talk about managing your credit card. And I'm sure that this will fall in the National Financial Literacy Program, because credit cards are a blessing and a curse for some people. If you know how to use them, if you don't know how to use them, you can fall into real traps financially and find yourself in a circle, a cycle that you just can't seem to get out of. Let's begin by determining whether or not people should get a credit card, or who should get a credit card, if everyone should get one, or if there are certain people, or how does it work? Because a credit card sounds like a nice thing. It's money that you use and you pay back after a certain amount of time, and all of those things. But let's get back to that. Should everyone have a credit card or no?
I would not recommend it, because you started out by saying it's a blessing and a curse, and that is precisely the case. All right, you have to know yourself and know whether you can manage the responsibility of a credit card. So, in the first place, one of the considerations would be, can I afford it? All right, you will make expenses, but incur expenses which you may cover with your credit card. But is your income known, predictable, regular, such that you'll be sure that you will be able to clear those expenses? Because really and truly, a credit card is, in effect, a line of credit. Someone makes available to you 5, 10, 15, 20, 40, however many ever thousands of dollars that you can spend. All right. In ideal circumstances, you would want to clear your credit card balance at the end of the month or the end of your billing cycle, as the case might be. In which case, you do not incur the interest cost on your credit card. However, there's an annual renewal fee. All right. It's in the order of a few hundred dollars. It varies from institution to institution. But you have to pay that irrespective of whether you use the credit card or not. And then what lulls people, what seduces people about credit cards is you have the ability to pay a minimum amount. So you may be owing, let's say, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 on your credit card. the minimum amount that you are required to pay is a very small fraction of that outstanding balance. And therefore, you could at the same time see your savings account balance looking healthy, and you're making purchases and your balance is not going down, so you're feeling good about it. But you're lulled into a false sense of security in terms of what your true financial situation is. Because as your credit card balance mounts, if you have to settle the entire balance and therefore avoid incurring interest, you'll see your savings account balance drop significantly, perhaps in an instant. All right. And when you pay the minimum balance, what you would be doing is incurring the additional expense of the interest rate charge on credit card. And by the way, credit card interest rates are among the highest in terms of type of loans. Credit card can incur an annual percentage rate, an APR, of as low as 24%. Which is like 2% per month on your outstanding balance. There are some, and just a small increase, an increase from 2% to 2.1% moves your APR, your annual percentage rate, to 25.2% per annum, which is like $25.20 for every $100 you borrow for a year. $25.20. Now, we convert it to APR because when you're speaking interest rates, you want a standardized metric so you could compare, all right? And when you're comparing what rates they're charging for the credit card, the interest rates on the credit card, these are some of the factors that you have to consider to determine whether that credit card is suitable for me.
There's a lot to consider, but it's so seductive. Getting this money and fooling yourself into thinking, well, I could pay the minimum balance and the minimum payment all the time and get away. But it doesn't work that way. It really doesn't. And then you find yourself with this interest growing because you've not paid back the principal amount that you've used, and the interest on that keeps growing and growing. In other parts of the world, there are raging debates about credit cards and credit card bills and the fees associated with credit cards. And one of those issues that has been raised is charging interest on interest. Is that something that we have to grapple with here at home?
As it stands now, the interest is usually treated as a separate charge. But anytime that interest is capitalized, you would effectively be paying interest on interest. And I want to add one other thing about the seduction of a credit card. Many cards come with rewards, cash back, mileage, hotel discounts, right? These are some of the things that, depending on who you obtain your credit card from, or which vendor, you are allowed different kinds of benefits. So some credit cards have cash back, some have discounts for different kinds of hotels and restaurants, and some have frequent flyer miles. So you think, well, I'm going to use my credit card a lot because I'm going to get miles and I'm going to get points and I'm going to get this and I'm going to... So there's a built-in incentive for you to use your credit card more. And nothing is wrong with that. The proviso is that you ensure that you are able to pay not just the minimum balance, but as often as possible, that you can clear the entire balance and thereby avoid the interest payment. If you, for whatever reason, are unable to, that's fine. But you have to plan your way out properly, because we did a survey in 2013, and the survey told us that 44% of the population of Trinidad and Tobago had low financial capability. And by low financial capability, it means that some didn't really understand how to manage debt in such a way that you substitute cheap debt, cheap credit, for expensive credit. So if you are able to obtain, say you want to do some repairs on your vehicle, your home, you want to construct a wall, an additional bathroom, whatever it is, it may be better that you obtain a loan an installment loan from a financial institution, whoever you interact with. And you can get rates such as 8%, 9%, 12%, sometimes even lower if your credit is good and you're properly collateralized. All right, you have good collateral. Sorry. You can get a more reasonable rate than, say, you use your credit card to do these things without a clear picture of how you're paying back, and you're thinking that you're going to be paying back in installment over several months. So, you know, you want to make sure that you're using the most appropriate option. And by that, I mean the more cost-effective one for you as a financial consumer.
Mm, yeah. And we've been dealing with a lot of financials on the program for a number of weeks. And that one did come up, actually. Clearing off your credit card and taking a loan as opposed to paying it off just so because of the interest rates that are associated. We need to take a couple quick messages, but when we get back, we'll delve deeper into this thing about managing your credit card and how it's supposed to work, because responsibility was something that we touched on earlier on. Let's delve into what those responsibilities are in properly managing the use of a credit card. Stay with us.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
Welcome back. Speaking this morning with our special guest, Senior Manager of the National Financial Literacy Program and Financial Services Ombudsman, Dominic Stoddard. Managing your credit card, before we went to that break, I was suggesting that, well, maybe we should be telling people what some of the do's are and how to manage successfully a credit card. Let's get right into those.
Hello?
Yes, we're hearing you. Suggesting that we should be telling people some of the guidelines that they should put in place when it comes to managing their credit card successfully.
Well, there are two really important things that I'd like to share with the listening public. The first thing is, whenever you get into a contractual arrangement with a financial institution, whether it's for a credit card, a debit card, a fixed deposit account, an insurance policy, whatever it is, you want to try to understand the terms of your contract, or the terms of your account agreement. When you apply for a credit card and you sign saying that you agree to the terms and conditions, you're bound by those things, and you have to ensure that you always abide by them, because any kind of infraction, the institution no longer becomes liable. So you have an account, let's imagine we were not yet at the stage of chip and pin where someone could just tap, but you had to use the card, insert and use a pin. Part of the terms of your account agreement, even with debit card, credit card, debit card, doesn't matter. You shared your pin with someone, so you gave your nephew or your niece or your cousin or your sibling your card and say, go to so-and-so place and do this transaction for me, whatever. Part of the terms of account agreement was that you ought not to disclose your PIN to anyone else. All right? And once you do that, you breach the terms. So if money turns up missing on your account sometime down the road, and it was ever revealed that your PIN had been disclosed or was used by another person, the institution is no longer liable. So that's the general point, is to abide by the terms of your account agreement. And in particular, with credit cards, sometimes it might seem detailed and long. A lot of it is definitions and that kind of thing. But there are some important terms that you want to make sure that you understand. And if you don't, seek assistance from an appropriate and objective source. That's the first thing. Understanding how the credit card works, all right? Your billing cycle and the interest rate, how it charges, purchase finance charges, and the like. But the second most important thing that I would like to share with the public is your credit card has the facility to make cash withdrawals from an ATM. Now, that might seem like, you know, really convenient, but my advice to you is manage your financial affairs in such a way that you don't ever have to do that. Because when you use your credit card to make cash withdrawals, you will get the money from the bank, providing that you haven't yet reached your limit. they will provide you with the cash, but there's an immediate charge. Sometimes, in some cases, 2%, in some cases, 3%, and probably more. Now, you don't want to incur those charges because you immediately are charged a percentage on the cash that you take, and the amount that you take will be added to your outstanding balance, and then you incur interest on that outstanding balance. So it's as if you're being hit twice. So you want to really be careful and avoid doing that. Mm-hmm. Some of the do's, I would say, try as far as possible, and I would have said it before, to clear your balance at the end of the billing cycle or the month, as the case might be, because a credit card is a really convenient thing. If you travel, you don't have to always worry about getting adequate foreign exchange, because you can use your credit card to make purchases almost anywhere in the world. All right, that's one thing. Making purchases, and sometimes they also have some useful and interesting rewards and cash back and that kind of thing. And especially if you see something, if you see an opportunity that you can take advantage of that you do not have the immediate cash for, a credit card is really a convenient way to take advantage of the opportunity to make sure that you access it and work out the details and try to have a solid plan for how you're bringing down your credit card balance, because that minimum balance, it would seem like you're taking forever. All right, you find yourself taking 2 years to pay back a small amount because they just keep taking this bare minimum, and that hard balance that remains, you're just paying interest on that and interest on that. Though declining slowly, the amount of interest you pay is not something that is something that you want to avoid.
Mm, well, most definitely. So those are definitely one of the pitfalls when it comes to this, because people think it's a false sense of security that you have this credit card that you could use it and I don't need to pay back, and I could pay back a little bit, but that doesn't work. Definitely doesn't work. And you see the interest starting to grow, and then you get scared, because you find yourself now with this huge amount of money owed to this financial institution, and you're trying to figure out to yourself, well, how did I get to this stage, and what do I do about it?
And it seems like it doesn't want to go away, just, you know. But I wanted to ask, you know, to broaden the discussion. Credit cards are but one form of credit, all right? There are other kinds. So you can have your credit from consumer loans, regular loans. You could have credit from your mortgage loans. You've taken out a mortgage on an asset. You could also have higher purchase credit, you know, various types of credit, right? But you want to ensure, first of all, that when you're going into debt, there's good debt and there's bad debt. Mm-hmm. Good debt is when you go into debt for something that is productive, something that is self-developmental, something that will bring improvements either to your standard of living, that of you and your family, as the case might be. But it's not outright consumerism and dealing with immediate gratification. It's usually not impulsive. So it's not you went online and you were just browsing a site and you see something and immediately, I'd like to have that. No. That's usually not good debt. All right? Good debt is when you incur debt for something like studies. You pay a bill for tuition fees. You're doing something that improves the value of your home, protects the security of your family, that kind of thing. And bad debt, and this is not to say that people must not enjoy life, but bad debt is like when you, let's say, take a significant loan to go on a vacation. If you want to go on a vacation, you should be setting aside monies for you and your family or whoever to go on that vacation months, probably years ahead, in small amounts, building up to how much you project that vacation might cost. But not preparing for it and taking a loan against that, that's usually not a good idea. And some people will say, well, I don't play math is my thing, so you want to take a loan to play mass and do fets and, you know, that kind of thing. You want to ensure that when you do go into debt, it's usually for a provident or productive purpose.
This is where we're going to have to drop the curtains on our interview. We're out of time, but I'm positive that we'll need to speak to you again. To find out more about the National Financial Literacy Program, definitely more about the services of the Financial Services Ombudsman, and to go down this road of educating people of some of the do's and don'ts when it comes to their finances, it may seem like par for the course. Some people should know this, but not everyone does. As you said, you outlined the statistics of persons who are aware of what's going on and how many people still have challenges. Mr. Stoddard, I want to thank you for being with us here this morning. And definitely our production team will get back in touch with you, because we need to have more discussions, because this is a topic we've just brushed the surface of all the things that we can discuss, that's for sure.
Yes, thank you for having me. Thank you, the listeners, for giving up their time. And I hope that they will really seek us out at the National Financial Literacy Program to access some of the free services we have on offer.
Definitely so. And that's where we drop the curtains on this interview this morning. Our special guest, Dominic Stoddard, Senior Manager, the National Financial Literacy Program and Financial Services Ombudsman.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.